Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's all things political for this Monday, the 11th of April. Last week on this Monday, we were in the NPR studios doing our all things political, and today we are home. Just a few words. First, many thanks to John Munson for taking over this show while I was gone. He is so good and such a nice person, too. And secondly, I miss all of you who were on the Washington trip. It was a wonderful trip. We had a lovely letter from one of the listeners, Jane. I'll just say her name is Jane. And I just want to echo what she had to say in this. She wrote to WPR, "I don't care how much you read, how many films, videos, TV shows you see, there is nothing more powerful than being on the spot. Take just one aspect. Gettysburg is enough to make an instant pacifist of you, standing on Cemetery Ridge and seeing with your own eyes that vast plain which had been carpeted with fallen bodies, so thick you could hardly walk without stepping on the fallen, brought the reality of war, courage, patriotism right smack in the face with all the complexities that each involve." And then you segue that image into the seeing the rows following rows and still more rows of gravestones in Arlington Cemetery, and it gives even greater poignancy to what you can give to your country and what has been given. She said that, this paragraph that we'll get on today, because I love this, "These listeners were troopers, not to be passed over. Our band of Wisconsinites, 52 of us, all devoted Wisconsin Public Radio listeners. There is a reason why Wisconsin is known for people of integrity, intelligence, and sure-footed leadership. We have a history of progressive thinking and excellent education, and Wisconsin Public Radio to listen to. Your service touches, informs, inspires farmers on their tractors, housewives in their kitchens, children osmosing in the back seats of cars. Our trip brought together a delicious cross-section of our wonderful state and made them fast friends. Being in their company was a delight and a privilege." And I feel the same. That trip will stay with me for a long time. And my mind is still in Gettysburg. It's in Wisconsin, too, but I've been reading a lot about the Civil War, which marks its 150th anniversary tomorrow with the first shot at Fort Sumter. So it was a really good trip. I've been thinking about it. I just think we ought to repeat it, actually, and take some of you who didn't have a chance to go. But thank you, everybody, for being with us. It was good. Mike Goucher, who's also good, is with us this hour of the program as we talk about what's been going on in Wisconsin. And, you know, he's a Civil War buff, too, so we may start in a completely different direction. He is Distinguished Fellow in Law and Public Policy at Marquette University Law School. He had a 25-year career at WTMJ Television in Milwaukee. In his role at Marquette, he's done some wonderful things. He organizes and coordinates forums and conferences which address public policy issues. He brings newsmakers and political debates to campus. He has done a great deal of serious interviewing of people who have been running for all kinds of offices. And many of you are familiar with Upfront with Mike Goucher, which airs statewide. He has won tons of awards for his work. And he actually started at WSAW-TV in Wausau, Wisconsin, and WIBA Radio in Madison. Graduated from UW-Madison, and his father was a former superintendent of schools. We were just talking about our parents and how time goes by and the Civil War. Mike, always a pleasure to have you here. Thank you so much.
It's great to be with you, yeah. Kathleen.
It's interesting when you spend time in a place like Gettysburg and Washington, how the past, which is always should always be the case for people in our profession, does inform what's going on right now. I'm just taken by Gettysburg and Washington and the seat of power and the military conflict that has informed this country for so long. It is striking, isn't it?
It's powerful. I grew up, you and I were talking earlier, I grew up in Delaware. At least part of my childhood was spent in Delaware. And so on summer vacations, we would travel to some of the old battlefields of the Civil War. And I don't think until you spend time in those hallowed places that you truly, truly appreciate the sacrifice that occurred in this country. It really is it's a good time for reflection. It really is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. And you also realize all it is that you have to learn. I keep thinking, well, I know a lot now because I'm really old, but I keep thinking about all there is to be learned. And so now I'm on the Civil War kick and reading as much as I can about the Civil War. There are other things that strike you. Arlington Cemetery struck me because I come from an Irish Catholic family, and John Kennedy, to have him elected in 1960 was brought tears to everybody's eyes. To be at that eternal flame and look at the gravesites of Jacqueline and John and Bobby and Teddy now, I the tears were just, and it wasn't just, it was tears for many years ago, but it was tears for family and so much, too, that just reduced me to not being able to do much other than sit there and think.
Washington, to me, has always been a place where it's an emotional place for me. And I know people think that's a little odd, but I've been to presidential inaugurations and covered presidential funerals. And you, when you're there, to me, the thing that always strikes me about this country is what a special place it is, how many things we take for granted. And so there are all these reminders when you're in Washington. Whether it's seeing the peaceful transition of power during a presidential inauguration or visiting the monuments or visiting Arlington, there are so many places for us to be reminded of just what a truly remarkable place America is. And so, you know, I envy you because I said to Kathleen before we came on the air that it's been a while since I've been out there as a tourist, as someone who's just had a chance to soak it all up again. And so I wish I'd been one of the listeners
on the trip.
We'll
go again next year. You know, we'll do it with you guys. We'll go again next year. It was good. Well, and I am continually amazed by what happens in Wisconsin. It is one darn thing after another, isn't it?
Just when you think you have it figured out, there's something new the next day. It's
You've
truly amazing.
You've been news in the state for a long time. Have you ever seen anything like this?
Politically, no. Never have. It's truly every day is something new and different, and just when you think you might know the path of the storyline, you're surprised. And last week was no exception.
Yeah, and there is to be, I wonder if it's anything related to last week's election, but there's been this tease of an announcement from the Milwaukee DA and the Government Accountability Office this afternoon in Madison. Is anybody have an inkling what that's all about?
I've seen a couple of reports this morning. The folks over at WisPolitics.com, the political website, said they have talked to a Government Accountability Board spokesman about this. And all he would indicate is that this is not directly related to the Waukesha County vote count issue. So I guess we'll find out at 2 o'clock. But they're not saying much more than that at this point.
Yeah. What about the news of last week? It is, unfortunately, we are so incredibly divided. And I must say that we're not very nice to each other. We're in a couple camps here in Wisconsin. And there will be people who will never believe what happened last Tuesday is legitimate. There are people who are furious with those people for, you know, we won fair and square, get over this and move on. How do we move on from this? Is it something that needs a federal investigation for everybody to feel okay about this, or will we be okay with a recount of Waukesha County, or what? Because this doesn't sit well with some people.
My answer to that would probably be it depends on where you come down on this issue. It may depend, interestingly, on your politics, what you think would satisfy the public's curiosity about this. I've talked to some people who feel that a recount might be a good thing for this state, because we really are talking about the integrity of the vote. And no matter how you feel about what happened, I think people want to know, how are we tabulating these votes? How are they counted? Do we need to change the process in some way to make it perhaps a little more accurate? It's been very interesting watching the vote totals come back as the canvassing has gone on, and you see discrepancies. And people want to know that their vote is counted. So in the sense that it might be a good thing for a recount to happen, that's a possibility, because I think some people would find that a way of satisfying their need to know more about how we conduct votes in this state. So for some people, that might be it. For others, they might feel it's unnecessary, that simply the canvassing is enough. There's a wide enough margin. Why do we need to go through this? This just gets people more worked up. But again, it depends at least in part on your politics, on how you view this race, the state, all of that.
And when you say recount, are you talking a statewide recount or a Waukesha County recount?
Well, I noticed over the weekend that the Prosser campaign said we would be okay with a Waukesha County recount. The Kloppenburg campaign sort of dismissed that. They said that's what they're talking about. We're still analyzing the data. We're still talking about it. We haven't made a decision on whether we would ask for a recount. And again, the recount, there are a couple of things to watch for here. For a free recount to occur, and by free, I mean the state pays for it. I mean, somebody does pay for it, but there would be a free recount. She would be entitled to that if let's say the vote total holds right now. David Prosser's ahead by about 7,300 votes. That's pretty close to this rule that says if you're within one half of 1%, then you can get a free recount. We're very close. That's very, very close. Otherwise, you have to pay $5 a ward. And the person asking for the recount would have to pay. That would be Joanne Kloppenburg. On her Facebook site, she is asking for contributions for a recount. So she has not said whether indeed they will ask for one, if in fact she is behind when this vote canvassing is completed. But she would have to pay for it if it's outside that one half of 1% margin.
How important and why are the results of this election, and why are they so important? What are the ramifications of this election?
This election has been framed as a battle for retention of the, quote, conservative majority on the court. Right now, the feeling is, and most observers would say, that the court tends to lean 4-3 more towards conservatives. Now, people on the court will dispute that and say we vote on a case-by-case basis. You know, that's the political spin on all of this. But that's the way I think it's safe to say it's been framed. A 4-3 conservative margin on the court, that is at stake. If Joanne Kloppenburg is elected, that would change. And I think that poses some question marks for the Walker administration, for the Republican-controlled legislature. I mean, one of the issues that may come before the court is the whole collective bargaining legislation in some form. So the composition of the court conceivably could be very important. And that's why you have all the special interest groups weighing in. Mm-hmm. They feel there's something at stake, and largely they feel that the court will either be a conservative majority or a more liberal majority. And that's why you have millions and millions of dollars being spent in Wisconsin on this race.
And what about, it does bring into question, because I did not know who has access to final results and where that information is stored. Is there an issue here about putting information on a personal computer and being the first and the last to have access to that? Is that common all over the state?
I can't give you an answer to that. I don't know whether it's common. I do know that in this case, I think there will be some questions asked about saving votes on a personal computer, which is apparently what occurred in Waukesha County. That's how the city of Brookfield votes were not counted. And so I think there will be some questions asked about that. There have been some questions raised in the past about the clerk in Waukesha County. An audit found that there could be some things done differently that might help. While the Government Accountability Board head, Kevin Kennedy, said over the weekend that you know, he has faith in her performance on the job and thinks she largely does a good job, there are always things you can do to be better. And that's sort of the way he left it.
Right. It also seems as though we're going to be in a perpetual state of elections now. The recall elections, give me an update on those. How many we will see, when we will see them?
Well, there are 16 state senators who are the targets of recalls, 8 Democrats who left the state. That's why some people want to recall them. They were not happy about their decision to leave Wisconsin during the collective bargaining discussion. And then you have 8 Republicans who are the targets of recall. Everybody I talk to feels that a number of these are not going to happen, but there are some that are very likely to happen. Out in western Wisconsin, Dan Kopanky, the incumbent out there, they've already filed the signatures to force a recall election. There's already an announced candidate, Jennifer Schilling, who's in the state assembly right now. So that's a very that will happen in all likelihood. And that's a tough race for Dan Kopanky. If you look at the vote totals from the other night and Tuesday, and you look at the vote totals even in November, western Wisconsin, in that area in particular, the La Crosse area, has become a pretty strongly Democratic area. So that could be a challenge for him. Randy Hopper up in the Fond du Lac area has been the target of a recall. The people there feel they'll have the signatures. The question is, who will be the candidate? Down in Kenosha County, the Democratic State Senator Robert Wirch, the people leading the recall effort down there feel that they have enough signatures and feel they have a shot at taking down Robert Wirch. There's some talk about a recall in northern Wisconsin. Jim Holprin is the incumbent up there, Democrat again. They do not have the signatures yet. And the same is true, from what I'm told, in Alberta Darling's district. They are trying to get the signatures right now, but they still have a few to get, clearly. And so those are the races that I hear. There are some others. Luther Olson is a name that you hear mentioned. Sheila Harsdorf, both Republican lawmakers up in northern parts of the state, northwestern for Sheila Harsdorf and the Ripon area for Luther Olson. They could be in some jeopardy, too. So most experts that I talked to, if you want to handicap this thing, say it's possible that the Democrats could maybe pick up a couple of seats. The concern is if they need to get three to change the majority in the Senate, and that might be difficult because it's possible that one or two of the Democrats who are the targets of recalls could also go down in this. But people say they do believe there will be certain state senators recalled when it's all said and done.
And when does this happen? Is it going to be in the next 4 months, Mike?
Yeah, I think you'll see a lot of this in early summer. So as the campaigns, as you said, will continue.
They sure will.
Yeah.
This is something. Let's welcome phone calls. Mike Gouchet is our guest this hour for All Things Political. Here's our number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email address is, hey, look at, I'm remembering everything. Talk@WPR.org. Talk@WPR.org. Our number two of our program today, Salon.com has a new study using the new Census Bureau data ranking Milwaukee as the most segregated urban area in the entire country. We'll be talking about that with two guests. We'll have a contributor for the Milwaukee Drum and chairman of the Political Action Committee for the NAACP and the president of the Milwaukee chapter of the Black Alliance for Educational Options will be joining us, hour number two. To your phone calls momentarily, this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to your phone calls now for Mike Gouchet, Dawn in Green Bay, our first caller. Hi, Dawn.
Hi, good morning. Just have a comment. I was pretty amazed when I was reading about these counties in Milwaukee, these conservative counties, that like in November they voted 75 percentile, and in like Washington and Ozaukee they were, you know, this time they were 50 plus percentile. And, you know, I really think the Democrats have to find a way to get their people out and voting at this level. I was amazed.
Don, thanks for the question. I also should mention I left a name off the list of the targets of the recall, Dave Hansen, up in the Green Bay area, Democrat, who may face a recall election, too. You make an interesting point. The election was fascinating if you looked at the numbers around the state. The collar counties or ring counties, as you describe them, around the Milwaukee area have become the strongest Republican counties in the state. Ozaukee, Washington, Waukesha, all over 70% for David Prosser in this election, and very strong again in November for Republican candidates. Interestingly, Racine County has been added to that, at least for the last couple elections. Racine County, very strongly Republican in this race. So Democrats, and that used to be a county that many people felt was sort of a toss-up county. It's not always been this way, I guess is what I'm saying. So I think for Democrats, I think Democrats have a hard time in Ozaukee, Washington, Waukesha County. I'm not sure they're going to devote a lot more time to those counties because they think it's diminishing returns. You can spend a lot of time there, but they're not going to turn a lot of votes in their direction. You might see them try a little bit harder in Racine County, but what's happened is Waukesha County is growing. It is a big Republican county, and it begins to offset some of the votes that you see in traditionally Democratic counties like Dane or Milwaukee. So it's a problem. I agree, for Democrats, it's a problem.
And the vote turnout in Milwaukee was pretty darn low, Mike. What do you make of that?
I think you had a county executive race that was not a thriller. I think most people would describe it that way. It was an interesting race that had some, kind of curious pieces to it. But it was not one that was a real lively contest. And so some people, I don't think, felt terribly engaged by that. And I think on the Supreme Court race, That's just one of those races. You've got a candidate for Madison, a candidate who's an incumbent, but who's from the Fox Valley. I don't think they felt a lot of connection to the candidates, the people in the city of Milwaukee. The Supreme Court is one of those races that I think it can seem awfully distant from a lot of folks. They don't feel like it touches their lives very much. You can make a strong argument that it does. But I think a lot of people don't feel that way, and that may have been the case in Milwaukee.
And yet you look at the state workers, you look at the teachers who were highly organized in this city. They marched from Riverside High School to Madison, many of them. Is that just a small part of the city population? You would have thought they would have turned out because it was very much tied to a referendum on the direction of the state.
I was a bit surprised at the turnout in Milwaukee, in Milwaukee County. There were definitely people who had things at stake in this race, and they viewed themselves as being stakeholders in this race. But for whatever reason, the numbers were not there. And that hurt somebody like Joanne Kloppenburg, ultimately.
Sure.
Turnout being lower in Milwaukee County, she was getting about 57% of the vote in Milwaukee County. Probably would have liked to have done a little bit better than that. Chris Abele did over 60%. The Democratic County, not Democratic County, again, nonpartisan race. They feel awfully partisan, but
yes,
nonpartisan
do.
Race.
Yes,
but he got a little over 60% in that race. So the fact that we didn't have a great turnout and that she was below that 60% number we always hear about probably didn't help her a lot.
So is it fair to say that the huge Republican vote came from Waukesha, the huge Democratic vote came from Madison?
I think that's fairly true, although we should point out that David Prosser did very well in northeastern Wisconsin. He did very well in places like Winnebago County, Outagamie County, Brown County, very well. Fascinating map. If you look at the state where David Prosser did well, northeastern Wisconsin, the ring counties around Milwaukee, where did Joanne Kloppenburg do well? Madison and west. And into northwestern Wisconsin, with a little bit right up along the Lake Superior shoreline, where you're, and the UP border, where you have, you know, places like Superior and Bayfield, and that's very Democratic too. So, really, a picture of two different states.
Yeah, and I appreciated you were giving us that information on election night. I wanted to thank you for that and for staying on the air a good long time too. That was
I appreciate that.
That was good.
My friends over at ISN TV here in Milwaukee. It was an interesting night to be a part of.
Thanks, Don, very much for the call. And let's go next to Jim in Milwaukee. Hi, Jim.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to speak about advice given to a dying cancer patient and. On a parallel course, the Republicans' position on the EPA in the past week. I went down to see my brother in Mississippi, and I saw him on Tuesday, and on Wednesday morning he passed away.
Oh, I'm sorry, Jim.
Thank you. He died of pancreatic cancer. And cancer patients tend to be somewhat down about their physical appearance, and of course they're worn down by the cancer. And I just pointed out to him that the cancer couldn't touch his core being, his soul. It couldn't touch his body of work in terms of the good things that he did in life, and it couldn't touch the wonderful relationship with his wife and his three children. And so I was trying to give him a sense of meaning to his life. And yet on a parallel course, as I was reading the Jackson papers waiting for the funeral on Saturday, I was hearing about the Republicans trying to weaken the enforcement powers of the Environmental Protection Agency. And I don't have a shadow of doubt that some of the causes of cancer relate to environmental issues. And to undermine the powers of an agency that can protect us from life-threatening cancer-causing chemicals is not in any way protective of life. And it just seems to me that anybody with even a sliver of common sense would not want the EPA weakened. And I just wonder what's wrong with these people.
Well, first, let me express my condolences on your loss, Jim. I don't have a good answer to the latter part of Jim's comment. I think that's one of those issues where people do have a different takes on the role of environmental protection, how it should be done, what's the most effective way of doing it. But I'm not really in a position to pass judgment on the performance of the EPA or things in the budget that might change the way the EPA performs its job.
What about this recycling issue in the state of Wisconsin? The mayor of Milwaukee was all over television last night, you know, standing in front of heaps of garbage and saying that the landfills just have no more space. Is this a philosophical thing that's going on here? Because I would think most people, we're really into recycling now, though. You know, I don't care what your political persuasion, you realize that you got to recycle. Do you know what the genesis is of that?
Well, I think it's like most things. The Walker administration feels that that's something that the state can no longer finance to the degree it's financed it before. I should say I'm not sure that it's a philosophical issue because there are Republicans who oppose this too. Robin Voss, who is the co-chair of the Joint Finance Committee, is not in favor of that proposal as it stands right now. So I think that's an interesting issue that has emerged as a battleground issue
in
this budget. Of all the things that are being talked about, recycling has become a bit of a hot button issue.
Yeah. Thank you, Jim, very much for your call. It's going to be a hard time for you ahead. Mary in Woodruff. Hi, Mary.
Hi. A few callers ago, a woman mentioned the voters of Ozaukee and Waukesha County, Washington County, and how they're so, you know, the Democrats, they have to get their voters out. Well, I have a feeling that the high percentage of Republican voters that count in those three counties do not go with the statistics across the rest of the state. They always have a turnout of like 70-some percent of voters in those three counties, Republican. And if you go back to March 22nd, there was a county board meeting in Waukesha County, and it had to do with the collective bargaining issue. And overwhelmingly, 70 responses, either written letters or people in person at this hearing, were against the collective bargaining aspects to Scott Walker's bill, and yet they still voted in favor of it. Now, there were only three people that were in favor of it, either in letter or in person. It tells me that there's a lot more Democrats in those counties than are being reported in the votes, and what has to be done is all the paper votes have to be counted in Waukesha County, and do not base anything on the tabulators, because there has definitely been something amiss in those counties.
Or you could also look at it that Republicans vote and Democrats don't.
No, it doesn't balance out over the other counties in the state, though. If you look at the percentages of votes and people who turn out to vote, you can't tell me those three counties vote more than anybody else. That's just, it doesn't make sense. Even, especially with the overwhelming backing of, you know, the whole anti-union thing that's happened in Madison. You can't tell me that those people in those three counties did not change their opinions. Anybody didn't change their opinion. And that's what it looks like statistically.
So you're saying that you think it's the paper ballots that were...
I'm saying there's fraud. There's election hacking that's going on. And when you've got a county clerk in Washington County who a couple years ago wouldn't allow people, go to blackboxvoting.org, they wouldn't allow people to get within 6 feet to view the process of the election, what was happening, without being threatened with arrest. It's becoming a history.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mary. What will convince people like Mary, and I'm sure there are others, that things are on the up and up?
I think this is not an uncommon sentiment that you hear right now. Let me just add a couple of things that we've heard in recent days. The head of the Government Accountability Board, Kevin Kennedy, in some respects, while not being pleased with the delay in letting his office know about these votes that were not counted, did essentially give something of a vote of support to Kathy Nicholas, the Waukesha County Clerk. He said, you know, people can always do better. In terms of the turnout, this has been the way it's been in these counties for some time. This is not something that is any different that we saw in this election than we've seen in past elections. They are just these counties are dominated by people who, when they go to the polls, vote Republican. Now, there may, in fact, be some Democrats out there, but they are badly outnumbered by Republicans on Election Day for whatever reason. And I think, the fraud issue, there was in the news conference that was held on late last week in the evening when they talked about the votes that were found. One of the people who looked at the votes was a Democrat who was there to look at all the votes and said, look, I wouldn't stand up here and tell you that I believed in this unless I believed in it. So I believe this count is accurate, the new total. And I might add one other thing. There have been a couple of very people I respect a great deal who write a lot about turnout and things like that. Craig Gilbert from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and Nate Silver, who does a really good blog for The New York Times. Very thoughtful guy. They looked at the voting trends in, for example, Waukesha County, and they said, if you really want to look at it, the numbers that have been added, and it makes a lot of sense. Otherwise, Waukesha County's vote would have been down from historic levels. So I'm not challenging the opinion that's being held. That's not my job. People can hold whatever opinion they want. But there are some people who would argue on the merits of whether or not fraud was what happened here.
It's just, it's one of those, oh my gosh, you got to be kidding me kinds of stories.
No question.
Because it only could have happened in Waukesha County. It only could have happened in a town that was fairly large, like Brookfield, to change this enough to keep a recount from happening. I mean, it's just one thing after another. It's no wonder people say, are you kidding me? Right. But indeed, it could be true.
And interestingly, Kathleen, I know Democrats who have said to me, imagine if 14,000 votes had been found in Milwaukee, what the reaction would be. So, I mean, there are people on both sides of the aisle here who feel very strongly about this whole question of voter integrity and whether or not the votes are always being counted the right way.
Yeah. But that's probably not the subject of the news conference this afternoon, that they found 14,000 votes in. No, now everybody will stay tuned. Wouldn't that be something? You know, you say that and you think, oh, that couldn't happen. But considering what's been going on.
All bets are off this year.
Mm-hmm. You got it, Mike. Let's go to Gavin is next from Cassville. Hi, Gavin.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I was wondering, you know, Scott Walker's been in political kind of overdrive ever since coming into office. And how does it help him, in Mike's opinion, to refuse the federal money when we don't have extremely high unemployment compared to what, like Mississippi, but, you know, we still have a lot of people without jobs and, you know, it's over, you know, $800 billion for that rail and then money to expand broadband access. And I'm wondering who wins by him refusing those funds because, you know, they're just going to go to other states.
All right. Good question. Thanks, Gavin.
Scott Walker, as we all know, campaigned against the high-speed rail concept. He just didn't like it. He didn't feel the state could afford the maintenance of it over time, that there would be costs that would be larger than originally anticipated. And so it became a major plank of his campaign. Once he was elected to office, politically speaking, there was no way he could turn away from that. He would lose credibility with some of his core followers if, in fact, he came into office and said, you know what, I've had a change of heart on that, and we are going to take the $800 million in money. Now, is that a smart thing to do politically? Obviously, he felt it was. The downside of that is there were literally several thousand jobs that he could have claimed credit for very quickly in his effort to reach 250,000 jobs over his first 4 years in office. So there is some political risk on that front. But he has tried to adhere, I think, to a political philosophy that he feels got him into office, and he's going to continue to do that. Now, it is interesting that I think he is more receptive to upgrading the line between Milwaukee and Chicago and the Amtrak line right now. I don't think he's going to deviate too much from what he said during the campaign on something like high-speed rail. That's pretty much been decided in the state.
Let's tie this into next hour's conversation, too, which looks at Milwaukee. Shame on us being the most segregated city area in the whole country. We are number one now, according to an analysis of the census, the latest census report. There are some who are saying that it is because of our transportation policy that we have not put people in Milwaukee to where the jobs are, and that would be Waukesha County. That would be, we've got to have some kind of mass transit system so that people can become employed. It's one of the problems we have here.
One of the issues that most people outside of Milwaukee don't spend a lot of time thinking about, but it's a very large part of this discussion, is that nearly 40% of the people who live in Milwaukee Central City do not own a car. They just simply don't
Isn't
own a car.
Something? Yeah, 40%.
And so you have literally thousands of people who have a hard time getting to a place of employment.
Mm-hmm.
There is bus service, but because of financial pressures on, for example, the Milwaukee County Transit System, there are fewer routes than there used to be. Those routes are slightly more expensive than they used to be. It costs a little bit more to ride the bus now, and they're a bit less frequent. The routes that are available. So it's a challenge. And many of the routes that go to places like Waukesha don't exist. There was a time where I think there were some routes, and some of those have been scaled back. And that's a problem because we've seen a lot of job growth just outside Milwaukee, just outside Milwaukee County. And so you have a problem where you have people who need jobs but can't get to jobs. And so there's this disconnect, and that's a big challenge for the city of Milwaukee in particular.
And is that one of the major reasons that we are number one? Chicago's number two, they say, but is it because we have transit in other large cities so people can get to where the jobs are? Because I would assume that most major cities are still predominantly minority.
Transit can make a difference in breaking down some of those the barriers between communities. That can happen. There are a lot of different explanations for what's happened in Milwaukee. I always find that one of these numbers always, I find them interesting because I love to see how they measure segregation. Milwaukee is, you live in the city of Milwaukee, I live in the city of Milwaukee, Kathleen. The city of Milwaukee has become a far more diverse place over the last 10 years than it used to be. We still do not have a lot of diversity in the suburbs outside the community. Some cities include basically the whole metropolitan area as a city. Indianapolis is one of those places. Basically, mm-hmm. All of Marion County is Indianapolis. And so I think it shows up a little bit better on those scales. We measure ours just the city as its own separate entity and then the suburbs around it. And I think that's part of what goes on here. It's how you measure it. How do you define what is a community? What is a city? Is it a metropolitan area? What are we measuring here? My guess is they're measuring the metropolitan area in this case, which then I think would be pretty true. We do not have a lot of diversity in the suburbs around Milwaukee.
Yeah. Mike Uche is our guest for All Things Political. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Oh, we have some emails, too. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to ignore you. We will get to those. Talk at WPR.org is that address. Mike is Distinguished Fellow in Law and Public Policy at Marquette University Law School. He is host of the statewide TV program Upfront with Mike Uche. More phone calls momentarily. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our number two, we will talk about Milwaukee being the most segregated metropolitan area. I think Mike is right in that regard and why that's the case. Tomorrow, we're not doing this just because we went to Gettysburg, but tomorrow is the start of the 150th anniversary of the Civil War. And Adam Goodhart will be with us at 10 o'clock, author of 1861, A Civil War Awakening. All right, I said we would go to some emails, so let's do that. From Jenny in Madison, on the ballot in Dane County, there was a constitutional amendment referendum on not equating money as speech and limiting corporations' rights. Do you know the results on this vote? I don't know.
I do
that
not.
At all.
I expressed my ignorance on that.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, somebody write it in because I didn't know this. Caller who wanted to know what it means that the Waukesha County clerk used her personal computer. Is this her own laptop or is it a work computer? What do we know about this?
I don't have all the information on that. I don't know if we know all of the information on that. I think it is a personal computer, whether it's a laptop or not. I honestly don't know. I think we will find out much more about this in the next several days. I believe that as more counting of the ballots, as people have a chance to look at the ballots in Waukesha County more closely, I think we'll have a better idea of what precisely took place. I'm sure the Government Accountability Board has the answers to all those questions.
Barbara in Milwaukee, hi.
Hi. This is a comment that I have that I would like to hear your comments, but I have been avidly reading Greg Palast's writing, and he did such a great analysis of the fraud in 2004, and then he updated it for 2008 in his in a later paperback. And I think the paperback was Armed Madhouse. And he writes for lots of different sources, but especially the BBC. And they have this team of researchers that is amazing. And they're one of the few papers that still have researchers. And he found fraud in the national elections in both 2004 and 2008. And if he were to come here and say that this election was without fraud, then I would trust it.
Mike.
Well, I think there are people who have deep doubts or suspicions about the outcome of the election. Again, I think this depends in part on your politics, how you come at it. You know, interestingly, the day after Joanne Kloppenberg, I guess it would be on that Wednesday, when it appeared Joanne Kloppenberg might have won this, there were people raising questions about whether there had been vote fraud in places like Milwaukee. It seems to be part and parcel of our conversation these days. And for some folks, they're going to want their own individual to pass judgment on it. And until that person passes judgment on it, they won't believe it. I don't know what's left. I mean, you have Tammy Baldwin, the congresswoman from Madison, calling for a federal investigation. Kevin Kennedy seemed to kind of downplay that idea late in the week. But there are going to be people who I think are just not satisfied no matter what the outcome is.
I'm wondering if there is, and thank you, Barbara, for the call, if there is or if there has been in the past, and it's a model that we should emulate now, something that newspapers can do here, something that television investigative units can do to really look at this vote or to do profiles of the county clerk or to... It seems to me as though there was a lot more rigorous, there were more reporters who were assigned to these kinds of things years ago when newspapers had more people than they do now. It's a whole different media thing right now. Am I off base here, do you think? Or
I don't know. I have to be honest. On this occasion, and I'm speaking about what happened in Waukesha County, I think most people... In the journalism business on election night, expect the county clerks to report accurate totals to the Associated Press, and that's what they go with. Certainly, there are not enough reporters to be everywhere in the state on election night. And even if they were, it might be hard for them to discover something like what happened in Waukesha County, where somebody with the click of a mouse or whatever hits save. And how would we know that? So I'm not sure all the reporters in the world could have discovered something like that on election night. I don't think there's any question that the media world is in some respects, a smaller world. There are fewer people doing what we do. But in this case, I'm not sure they could have done a lot to change, the information that was provided at that moment.
Here's an answer Chrissy found for us, the Dane County situation. It was a resolution basically refuting the Supreme Court decision in Citizens United. Dane County voted 84% in favor of it. Corporations are not people.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
Thank you. Thank goodness for our – I admit, I'm not over in Madison, and so I was not as knowledgeable
either.
About that.
Yeah,
one.
Thank you, Chrissy, for the information. Sue is next in Eau Claire. Hi, Sue.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, I'd just like to make the comment that I don't trust the election system. Everybody's forgotten all those voting machines that the Republicans put in that are owned by a company that's heavily Republican. And I think they can just kind of dial things up. The only thing that really overcomes it is a landslide. This election has similarities to Ohio with a Republican county clerk and a Republican county that happened to have exit polls that didn't match up with the voting, and then Florida in 2000. You know, it's just, I think it's a trick that can be pulled when people want to pull it. I'd want to see a paper ballot recount to really believe the results.
Again, this goes to what we've heard several times. People just remain unconvinced. I was talking about this the other day, Kathleen, with someone, and I said, interestingly, I know people, I work at a law school. I'm not a lawyer, I'm a journalist, but I work at a law school, and I talk to people who have a lot of knowledge about this. And I said, you know, what strikes me about this election, the Supreme Court race, is that at the end of the day, we may have two casualties here. We may have the institution of the Supreme Court. Many people now feel it's sort of it is a partisan, a player. And even though they say it's not, that's the way it feels. That's the way it looks. That's the way it smells to most people out there. And so people do not have a great deal of faith in that institution. And as we've heard, they also don't have a great deal of faith in our vote right now. And as I pointed out earlier, there are Republicans who still believe that voter fraud is very much a part of just about any election in the Milwaukee area. And we have now heard a number of people who say they simply do not believe the results. They believe that there was manipulation of the results. And so we also have people doubting that institution. So at the end of the day, a couple of our very important institutions in this state are called into question. And that's, I think that's kind of sad.
It's very sad. You just can't have that. You just can't have that. It's America. It's the foundation of who we are. That's awful. We haven't even let's spend at least a few minutes, because we're rapidly running out of time, on the whole government almost shutting down. Do you what do you think the analysis is, that the president gave too much, that Boehner won this, it was his victory? Is that how you read it?
That's how a lot of pundits are spinning it. And that they believe that Republicans seem to be the ones, they are the aggressors in this. They are initiating the discussion, that the president has had to play defense a little bit on this issue. He's clearly trying in advance of the 2012 election. I don't think there's any question. He's trying to move to the middle. He believes that's the winning strategy. In the process, he's left some more liberal Democrats disillusioned. But it's something he feels he has to do. I think the big question will be, once we move on to the larger issue, and the larger issue will be the president's plans for dealing with the deficit as opposed, for example, Congressman Ryan's plans, then you're going to see some real interesting discussions in this country. I think your initial question is probably the way most people see it, that John Boehner did pretty well, considering the many different constituencies, even in his own party.
Exactly.
He was trying to juggle.
Yeah. Dave is next in La Crosse. Hi, Dave.
Hi.
Hi, Dave.
See, I find this really kind of interesting. I find myself thinking about this almost like, you know, growing up, the good guys and the bad guys. I'm not trying to paint the Republicans as bad guys, but it's kind of like Mr. Potter and George Bailey, you know? You have... And here in La Crosse County, you think about, you know, we have 100 children who might not be on Badger Care, or, you know, children, families being removed from WIC versus the wealthiest people in the state, you know, not or getting, you know, having receiving or continuing to receive tax breaks. And there is a part of me that kind of, you know, it's kind of like Prince John and Robin Hood, or, you know, however you want to see it, but traditionally good guy, bad guy kind of thing. And I get really caught up in this, that there's this bad side that doesn't want to look at, you know, these children and what it means to them versus, you know, the wealthy becoming wealthier, or environmental protection. And it's just, I have a hard time getting away from that.
I think what you have here at the root of all of this in the state of Wisconsin is just two very different political philosophies at play. I said this. I interviewed Russ Feingold on our air at WISN a while back, and I asked him the question. I said he was talking about he was not happy with the collective bargaining legislation. He didn't like some of the measures contained in Governor Walker's budget proposal. And I said, but there was an election in November. And there are people in this state who just fundamentally disagree with this notion that we are going to be always the Wisconsin of last century, that we're this progressive state. They don't think that's what we should be in today's world. They don't think that makes us more competitive. They think the world has changed. And so you have these two very different philosophies of what is the proper role of government. And you see the state split. And I mean split in a big, angry, contentious way. Just about 50-50 on a lot of these key issues. So when we hear from Dave in La Crosse, I could probably find, you know, Jim in Waukesha County who says, look, we got to get our financial house in order. Something's got to give. Everybody's going to have a little bit of pain. I'm not saying what's right or what's wrong. I'm just saying you have these two diametrically opposed political philosophies, and folks are really going at it right now.
And probably the emergence, though, Mike, of a political philosophy on the part of the Republicans that is different for the state of Wisconsin, because previous Republican governors like Dreyfus were of a different persuasion.
Warren
I think.
Knowles.
That, yeah,
mm-hmm.
that this is a much more conservative. Warren Knowles, mm-hmm. definitely, who under his administration, right. we had the collective bargaining provision. So there's something, a different philosophy at play here, I think. It would be accurate to say that.
I think Scott Walker is he's a conservative Republican, and I think in the past the state a more conservative Republican than even Tommy Thompson.
Right. Yes.
I think he just sees the world differently, mm-hmm. and what you're seeing now is what he thinks the world should be. I will say one thing, Kathleen. I think a lot of people around the country are watching what's happening here.
Oh yes.
I mean, Republican strategists. So yeah. We'll see.
Thank you, Mike. Mm-hmm. Always a pleasure to see you.
You Thanks. Bet. Good to see you,
Mike Ushay, our guest this hour for All Things Political. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, to Chrissy Pease for on-air production in our downtown Milwaukee studios, and thank you everybody for all of your calls. We have news coming up from National Public Radio, and we'll return to look at Milwaukee. It being the number one most segregated community in the country. Why is that? Coming up after the news.